Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And we might get a little bit of disagreement among our listeners about whether this is the good martini today, but according to the Republican voters in Texas, there wasn't much of a question about it yesterday. As we have documented, and certainly as most political activists know, there are a number of Tea Party candidates hoping to not only win open seats this year in the U.S. Senate races, but there are also a handful of races in which they're looking to take down incumbent Republicans. One of those was the Senate seat in Texas, John Cornyn running for a third term. Steve Stockman, the guy who won Ron Paul's old seat, made a decision very late in December to run for the nomination in a big state like Texas with not much money and an early primary date, which was yesterday. His only hope was to stop John Cornyn from getting to 50%. He didn't come close. Cornyn got almost 60%. Jim, I know there's some folks on the right who think John Cornyn could be a little tougher in his role as a Republican leader, but there's also a lot of folks out there who think that there would have been a lot of Republicans answering a lot of questions about Steve Stockman comments if he had made it to the final round of this Senate race. So what's your sense on where the party is on this race?
You know why this is a good martini, Greg, is because it's over. For a long time, I subscribed to the theory that primaries are good things, that they are how we hash things out. They are how we resolve our differences and disagreements within the party. And cycle by cycle, I get a little less convinced that we're having these primary fights in a constructive manner as opposed to a destructive manner, you know, stirring up bad blood. So if you're going to have a hard-fought primary, maybe it's not such a bad thing to have it done in early March, so you've got quite a few months to unify the party and get everybody behind that. Obviously, it's Texas, so it's a fairly red state. Odds in the general election in most of these races are looking pretty good, although, you know, there is that Wendy Davis freight train we need to be careful of in the governor's race. Also, hot tip for the runoff, keep an eye on the Lyndon LaRouche candidate in the Democratic Senate primary who managed to get into the runoff. Good opportunity for Republicans to make mischief there. John Cornyn may not be everybody's cup of tea, no pun intended, but he went out there. He had challengers. I think we could argue about the quality and caliber of the challengers. But he went out and he won his primary pretty overwhelmingly. And that's the way the system is supposed to work. You can't argue this is a state full of squishes and rhinos and all that stuff. If Cornyn had gone too far to the middle or too far to the left to be acceptable, then there would have been a groundswell of opposition to him, and there wasn't. I mean, you can put some of this on Stockman. You can put some of this on that guy who ran the ad that said that Mitch McConnell looked like a animated turtle. The fact that he didn't attract a top-tier, serious, well-informed, consequential challenger kind of says that, you know what, most Republicans in Texas think Cornyn is doing at least a good enough job to send him back for another 6 years. So that's the way the system is supposed to work. There's been no allegations of widespread voter fraud or abuse or ballot box stuffing or anything like that. So this is the way the system is supposed to work, and hopefully Republicans will unify and go on to make solid conservative victories in November.
Yeah, we'll certainly see. A lot of primaries to go. This is kind of kicking off the season, and they go well into the summer, if not even a little bit later in some states. So pace yourselves, everyone. We got a lot of these to go. But we got some pretty clear results from Republican voters in Texas yesterday. On to the bad martini now. And Jim, one of the races that Republicans are looking definitely to win if they're going to get the majority in the U.S. Senate is Arkansas. Mark Pryor is perhaps one of the most vulnerable Democrats in the U.S. Senate. He's basically in a one-on-one race already against first-term Congressman Tom Cotton, who is a veteran of the Iraq War. I think he may have even served multiple tours in the War on Terror overall. And so his military service is certainly one of his great features on his resume for why he ought to be in the U.S. Senate. And Mark Pryor addressed that in a recent interview with NBC News. Here's how that went.
I will never criticize anyone for serving our country, and I say thank you for that.
But you don't see it as a qualification to become a senator?
No. There's a lot of people in the Senate that didn't serve in the military. In the Senate, we have all kinds of different people, all kinds of different folks who have come from all kinds of different backgrounds, and I think that's part of this sense of entitlement that he gives off, is that almost it's like, I serve my country, therefore let me to the Senate. That's not how it works in Arkansas.
Pretty strong words from a guy who's in the Senate only because his dad was there, Jim.
Yeah, you know, he's doing okay until he gets to the word entitled. And then it just goes all downhill from there because, you know, he's making factual statements. There are some folks in the Senate who have served in the military. There are some who haven't served. Cotton hasn't been in the House for very long. Some folks might say, you'd like to see a little more experience with the legislative process before you run to Senate. But look, this is when, you got a vulnerable Democrat running. So by golly, that prompted Cotton to jump in there. And he's a very impressive guy. And so, people will say to him, what impresses you more about Cotton? The number of bills he's gotten passed or his two terms in war zone? I think, people are going to say, give me the Bronze Star winner. Give me the heroic war veteran. He can pick up how a bill becomes a law. We've all seen Schoolhouse Rock. He can get the gist of this. So I can't imagine these comments will play well in Arkansas. Cotton leading most of the polls so far, looking very solid. Pryor's kind of your prototypical endangered and troubled red state Democrat. So this is not exactly terrible news, but I think it does show just where the Democrats will go if they really feel desperate, and they'll just start taking kind of the spaghetti approach and throwing everything up against the wall and see what sticks. And that means a long, long year of ugly campaigning, Greg.
All right, let's go to the crazy martini now. And this is not crazy funny, even though he has been the subject of crazy funny, crazy martinis in the past. Florida Democrat Alan Grayson is now denying, this according to CBS News, his wife's accusation that he shoved and injured her during a domestic dispute over the weekend. The Orlando Sentinel reports that a judge has granted a temporary protective injunction against Grayson after Lolita Grayson filed paperwork accusing the congressman of pushing her against a door during a confrontation at their home on Saturday, causing her to fall and injuring herself. The Sentinel reports that her petition states that Congressman Grayson showed up unannounced to their home and he asked to speak with her. She refused and asked him to leave. She then accuses the congressman of deliberately and with force pushing her very hard against the front door, causing her to fall to the ground as a result. It comes just 2 months after she filed for divorce, saying their 24-year marriage was irretrievably broken. Grayson saying this is completely wrong. He says that witnesses reject his soon-to-be ex-wife's story, calling it an outright lie, and that was Ms. Grayson who physically attacked the congressman as he attempted to visit with his children. The statement from his office is that since filing for divorce, Ms. Grayson's behavior has become increasingly erratic, and she has demonstrated an alarming disconnect from reality. What a mess.
I mean, I suppose for legal purposes, we should say that it's theoretically possible that his denials are true. It's theoretically possible that she's making it all up. He's entitled to the presumption of innocence in a court of law. In the court of public opinion, the rules are a little bit different. And people might look at this and say, why would this woman make all this up? According to the news article, she dialed 911. And 911 calls are public record. So at some point in the next few days, when some Orlando-based news agencies start filing the paperwork, we should get audio of that. And if he's yelling and screaming in the background, we should be able to hear stuff like that. We will have a little more context to this. Certainly, it is extremely disturbing and troubling. And if true, as Rick Wilson had put it on Twitter, we only say snide and obnoxious things about Alan Grayson because we can't horse whip him if these allegations are true. The other thing I'm just going to say, though, was that I'm trying to think of like the most milquetoast guy you could imagine. I won't even mention any guy because of what I'm about to say. But if the most quiet, easygoing, laid-back guy you knew was accused of hitting his wife, you'd be like, what, really? That guy? Is there anybody on earth who could say, no, not Alan Grayson? That's not like him at all. He's usually such an easygoing, laid-back, relaxed guy, so full of warmth and generosity and kindness in his heart. This is a guy who is, always used kind of violent, incendiary rhetoric. Remember, he compared his opponent to the Klan, and there's lots of times where he says, I'm Alan Grayson, I'm here to kick some ass and stuff like that. I don't think there's anybody who's watched Alan Grayson in the public context and said that they've seen something that would make this kind of allegation utterly impossible. And so online, yesterday you saw a lot of, true blue loyal Democrats saying, oh, she must be lying. This is all cooked up by the Republicans, all very predictable cognitive dissonance there. But I'm just going to kind of close with the thought, assuming that he doesn't resign from Congress and assuming that he runs for reelection, doesn't this complicate the war on women rhetoric? Or is he going to be the lead guy, as a decorated veteran of the war on women? It's so horrible, you almost don't want to make snide remarks about him. Like Wilson said, we do this because there's no further consequence that we outside the circumstances can bring to this. The police is investigating. Hopefully there's evidence one way or the other, and we'll get this resolved. But if it's true, then Alan Grayson is every bit the repugnant person we've always thought he was. And you'd like to think the Democrats would kind of think twice about defending somebody like that. So that's where we are, Greg.
Jim, you'll be at CPAC the next couple of days, so we won't be having our regular visits with each other, but we'll talk to you on Monday.
I am looking forward to talking to you on Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. There will be a 3 Martini Lunch, however, tomorrow, and please tune in for that. Join us then.